shattering this. I am your host, Yetta. Each weekday morning here on GCN, I strive to expose the beguiling and destructive myths associated with religion and politics, with patriotism in the media, and sometimes with the military and with economic schemes. Instead of merely presenting the news, my mission is to help you understand what is occurring behind the headlines that we will be discussing. Then during our second hour, we're going to engage God on His terms by way of His one and only covenant and through His always dependable Torah teaching, so that with His guidance, you'll be able to replace your religion with reason. Our phone number, if you'd like to question or affirm anything that is said over the next 2 hours, is 877-376-45. As I mentioned in yesterday's program, over the next 3 weeks, that would be from yesterday through March 8th, during our second hour, we're going to continue our examination of the Torah's presentation of our creation. Then, over the following 3 weeks, beginning March 11th through the 29th, we're going to focus exclusively on what the Torah has to say about the first three invitations to meet with God, explaining the purpose of these festival feasts and why that is important to you. And as a teaser from God to you on this, this is important because the only means to eternal life that is presented by God is derived by observing Passover. The lone means to redemption and thus salvation is exclusively afforded to those who observe unleavened bread. And entry into God's home as one of His children comes only to those who observe first fruits. So this is rather important material. You'll want to know everything that can be known and understood about these three dates with God, so that you, with this understanding, can make a rational choice as to whether you wish to accept this invitation from Him, ignore it, or reject it. Yesterday we spent the entire morning talking about Ratzinger in hiding. The reality is that he resigned because the Archdiocese of Los Angeles was forced to release internal documents without the names redacted that show that the Roman Catholic Church was not only actively trying to conceal the acts of pedophilia being perpetrated by its priests and to hide them from the judicial authorities, but that the cover up went all the way to the top, all the way to Ratzinger himself, when he was for 20 years in charge of the institution in the Catholic Church, the doctrine for the Congregation for Doctrine and Faith. It is once called the Holy Office. It is the office immediately beneath the Pope himself, and it is the office that reviews all discipline as it relates to priests, and that his office was the black hole that all of these allegations of crimes disappeared into, very seldom emerging with any retribution against the perpetrators or any comfort for the victims. And even when some 20% of these were actually addressed, they were not addressed for over 10 years by Ratzinger. Justice delayed is justice that is not served. And even then, with the scant 20% that were actually dealt with 10 years after the evidence was compiled of them perpetrating pedophilia, with them having 10 more years to abuse more children, the only thing that happened is that they were excommunicated from the church. Their files, their abuse records, the allegations against them were not turned over to judicial authorities. And so there was no accountability ever, nothing but a cover-up from the Roman Catholic Church and the man most responsible for that cover-up, the man most responsible for the sexual abuse of hundreds of thousands of Catholic children, was Cardinal Ratzinger, now Pope Benedict, about to be Pope or Cardinal Ratzinger all over again. In our program yesterday, we did not conclude the LA Times article on Mahoney actually taking three or four of these cases to Ratzinger. But since they are important, let's continue with that story. The LA Times reports that in another case, Mahoney found himself in a familiar position, struggling with Vatican delays. Now, if you're talking about Vatican in general, you need to understand that 100% of the authority and therefore purview of allegations of sexual abuse by Roman Catholic clerics came to Ratzinger. So you can equate here Vatican with Ratzinger because for 20 years he was the sole arbitrator as to what would be done or in most cases not done. In this case, it was Father Arwin Diestas, alleged sexual abuse of a seminary student, which first came to light and to Mahoney's attention back in 1992. By the way, the Roman Catholic Church, in dealing with most of the sexual abuse allegations, tried to sweep them under the rug and said, yes, we had a problem back in the 60s and 70s, but we cleaned up our act. That's not happening anymore. Well, every time that more evidence is revealed about Roman Catholicism and its influence on children, the dates continue to become more recent. This was in 1992. By then, the priest had returned to his native Philippines. Mahoney wrote to Diestas' bishop, urging him to keep the priest away from teenage boys and to have him undergo a psychological evaluation. When the bishop scoffed at the claims, Mahoney went over his head. Obviously, if Father Diestas has indeed engaged in such sexual misconduct, this is a quote, in the past, I am convinced that he has, this is now Mahoney saying, that he was convinced that this priest, Father Diestas, had committed acts of sexual misconduct in the past, then he should not be in any ministry involving young people, especially young seminarians, in quote, Mahoney told the Vatican office in 1993. Now imagine this. All Mahoney wants is for this Father Diestas to be kept away from young seminarians. He didn't even ask that he be removed from the priesthood. He didn't ask that he be held accountable for sexually abusing a child. Imagine how warped these guys are. It's like Penn State saying, you know, if you can just keep Sandusky away from our showers and away from children that we might want to recruit to our football program someday, then it'll be okay. You know, he can still surround himself with the trimmings of our football program. We don't really care. Mahoney told the Vatican office in charge that if they did not act, that the same kind of behavior would continue in the Philippines. In 2001, Mahoney visited a U.S. military base in Okinawa and ran into Diestas. He was working as a U.S. Navy chaplain at a seminary in the Philippines. Amazing. So here's this fellow that is that the Roman Catholic Church has evidence whereby they are absolutely convinced that he has engaged in sexual misconduct with children. And now this same fellow is working as a U.S. Navy chaplain. What a wonderful country we live in. What a wonderful world. The mix of militarism, politics and religion. It is a sickening sight. Mahoney again wrote to the Vatican asking why nothing had been done. So did the mother of one of his alleged victims. How many, this is a quote, how many other young men have been needlessly subjected to sexual abuse by Father Diestas since he was first reported 10 years ago? Wrote the mother, who learned that Diestas was still in the ministry through an internet search. In April of 2002, the Vatican told Mahoney that Daista's bishop remained dead set against taking action. 9 years after Mahoney's first letter, officials wrote, "We have forwarded the dossier on the aforementioned priest to the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith." 10 years late. Clearly frustrated, Mahoney tried to work around the Vatican. Over the next 2 years, the Archdiocese reported the allegations against Daista to church officials who worked with the military, the Los Angeles Police Department, and child welfare officials in the Philippines. So now that the fellow's out of the United States, he reports him to the Los Angeles Police Department. Daista could not be reached for comment, according to the Diocese of Sorsogon in the Philippines. He remains a parish priest. Welcome to the world of Roman Catholicism. If you were a Roman Catholic, you're an idiot. If you turn your children over to Roman Catholics for their education or for their religious indoctrination, then you are immoral. You don't deserve to be a parent. It isn't just that this organization is engaged in money laundering. It's not just that this organization is the world's worst when it comes to acts of sexual misconduct with children. It's not just that this organization is the worst in the world when it comes to covering up crimes and making certain that the victims of crimes that they perpetrate not only suffer once but twice. It's that everything that they say is the antithesis of the truth. Their claims regarding God are all lies. The holiest days on their calendars are purely satanic. Everything that they promise is unreliable. Everything they say is untrue. It is easily the most evil institution in human history. Many of you know that several days ago it was expected that a large asteroid was going to pass very close to the Earth. This particular asteroid was on a very different plane than the solar system at large and the planets that orbit around our sun. It was going to come from directly beneath the Earth, and it was going to come so close that this particular asteroid, which was 2012 DA14, was going to be an event that could be filmed for hours so that we could study what near-Earth asteroids look like and how they behave. Well, they got the film of this asteroid, but they got some surprise along with it. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. So while the world was focused on trying to observe and examine every aspect of the near-Earth asteroid designated by the catchy name 2012 DA14, a much, much smaller meteor crashed into Russia's Ural Mountains. It injured over 1,000 people. The shockwave blew out not only windows, but destroyed buildings. The shockwave was so massive that the energy released was 20 times greater than the bomb America dropped on Nagasaki and Hiroshima. Most of those who were hurt were injured in the Shelyabinsk region where the meteor actually struck, although it might be more accurate to say that the vast preponderance of this tiny meteor actually exploded in the air. The fireball streaked through the morning sky. Many of you have probably seen some of those video pictures. And, of course, the atheist Vladimir Putin, the former KGB officer in the secular humanist government, the communist government of Russia, thanked God that no big fragments had fallen in populated areas. Yes, I'm certain that God was right there. He was ever at the ready to catch the big fragments. He deserved to be thanked. He was God on duty right there. It's a wonder, though, that God was butterfingers and couldn't stop the entire asteroid, and that he allowed 1,000 people to be injured in this particular strike. You know, attributing God to these things is just repulsive.
I was just going to say that you'd think a guy that loves football as much as he does could catch a ball.
Oh, yeah. I mean, his quarterback's not very good. You know, there was a survey, Sports Illustrated, a survey of Americans, and the majority of Americans actually think that God takes sides in sporting events and that he intervenes in sporting events. I mean, can you imagine how despicable your God has to be to say, you know, I'm going to micromanage everything. This free will thing is a complete myth. I'm going to work against some children in games, and I'm going to play on behalf of other children in games. I mean, what's he going to do? Is he going to say, all right, that kid's arm is really lousy, can't throw a ball, you know, through the broadside of a barn. What I'm going to do is I'm going to create a wind and maybe a vortex here, and I'm going to nudge it so that it goes into the kid's hands. I mean, just think how utterly stupid you'd have to be to be thanking God for his greatness in your football victory, or thinking that he participated.
What? Like, think if you're on the flip side of that, though. So that means every time your team would lose, that means that's what he wanted to happen.
That's right. This God was against you. And look at, you know, the world's biggest sport is what we call soccer, but football to the rest of the world. And what we have learned is that in virtually every continent, the football games are fixed. And they're fixed because of the large amount of betting that is on them. So that God not only is into that sport, but into that sport, he has to somehow making money on the knowing who's going to win, because you know those games are fixed.
Well, you can't make it to all the football games without spending a little money. I mean,
it is just it's stunning. The reason, by the way, that I'm just sharing this story about the asteroid is that. It's twofold. One is that in the early history of our planet, we were bombarded by large asteroids on a regular basis. It was just a regular part of time here on Earth. And it wasn't until the Earth cleaned out and the Moon cleaned out a preponderance of those that were in its path that life was able to be conceived on this planet. And you know, we've been talking about that as part of the creation story, is that the Earth and the Moon had to clean out a huge swath of these asteroids, as did Jupiter, which is the ultimate vacuum cleaner in this regard, and to a large degree the Sun, before the air would clear and the temperatures changed on Earth so that liquid water was available and plant life could be conceived on this planet. The second is that in Revelation, Yahweh speaks of, and it's Yosha, I think, that is speaking in this case, speaks of a large asteroid striking the Earth. Uses the term aster, speaking of an asteroid striking the Earth, and speaks of the damage that it's going to do. And this is presented at the midpoint in the tribulation, therefore around 2029. And so we are likely seeing just a precursor as to what a small asteroid will do. When a large one hits, the damage will be catastrophic. I'm Yada. This is Shattering Myths. We're speaking about the events in Russia where the tiny meteor, it became a meteorite once it struck the Earth, was allegedly prevented from doing more damage by God. But you definitely don't want God to be the goalie of your soccer team based on the fact that that 4,000 buildings were damaged, over 77 square miles, and 1,000 people were injured as a result of this tiny, tiny fragment blowing up in the Earth's atmosphere. I read an article that was staying on the same subject of pretend gods, that the Vatican is considering calls for cardinals to hold the papal conclave earlier than planned after Pope Benedict XVI stepped down on February 28th. You see, the church officials want a successor to be in place before the start of Holy Week on the 24th of March, the most important event on the Christian calendar. Yes, they need to be prepared to celebrate Easter, which is named after Ishtar, which is the mother of God and the queen of heaven in the Babylonian religion. They didn't even bother to change the name. They don't want to observe Passover. Now, we've talked about this, that Passover is on sundown on March 26th. No, they're not there to celebrate unleavened bread. They won't even mention it. They're not there. They don't want somebody there to officiate and help explain first fruits, even though this is the only path to salvation. No, there wants somebody there. You got to have a Holy Father to lead the believers through the celebration of the Babylonian religious holiday of Easter. It is as putrid can be. Staying in the venue of false gods, we turn to Islamabad, Pakistan. Pakistani police have revised the cause of a blast that killed 83 people over this past weekend, saying that a suicide bomber was behind the attack that pulverized a busy marketplace. It is amazing that Muslims rail against Jews and Israel worldwide, saying that Jews kill Muslim children. They rail against the United States, saying that America kills Muslim children. And yet, here, a fundamentalist Muslim preacher, an imam, motivated one or more Muslim boys or girls to become a suicide bomber and to murder women and children at a marketplace, killing 83 people. The explosion targeted Shiite Muslims on the outskirts of the southwestern city of Quetta, authorities said. So this is Sunnis killing Shia. Police now say a suicide bomber driving an explosive-laden water tanker rammed the vehicle into buildings in the crowded marketplace. The water tanker carried between 800 and 1,000 kilograms of explosive material. So this wasn't just a small-time operation, a misguided cleric here and there. No, this was something that they planned, they perpetrated. They thought, you know, we can do a wonderful service to our wannabe God by filling a water tanker full of explosive materials, driving it into a crowded marketplace filled with civilians, women and children, and then detonating it. Boy, that'll make our God pleased with us. According to its interpretation of Islam, Lashkar-e-Jhangvi believes that Shiites are not Muslims. Now, that's not true. They know that Shia and Sunni Islam are both forms of Islam. They know that all Sunni Muslims know that every aspect of Islam was conceived under Shias. The Quran was first written under the purview of Shias. The Sirah, which is the biography of Muhammad, was first written under the auspices of Shias. The Hadith collections that we have today were written on behalf of and under the authority of Shias. And that when Sunni Islam came take hold, with its capital being in Damascus, there is no evidence of any Quran or any hadith or any biography or any history of Islam being penned. Nothing. And so all of the books that have brought us Islam, the five oldest sources, the history by Tabari, the biography by Ishaq, the hadith collections by Muslim and Bukhari, and the Quran itself, were all compiled under the authority of Shiites. And when the Sunnis came to the fore in Damascus, they did nothing. And so this idea that that this writer for CNN would say that according to its interpretation of Islam, Lashkar-e-Jhangvi believes that Shiites are not Muslims, that would be untrue. What they might view is that the Quran defines good and bad Muslims as a peaceful Muslim, as a bad Muslim. They're a hypocrite. And the Quran does order good jihadist Muslims to kill peaceful Muslims. So if you're not part of their terror group, if you're not conducting jihad with them, then the Quran does say you not only can, but you should kill all peaceful, moderate Muslims. But the rift, the killing that is taking place between Sunni and Shia Muslims, and particularly in the proxy war in Syria, where it is the most egregious today, is strictly based upon one concept and one concept only. It's the same concept that drove the killings between the Greek Orthodox Church and the Roman Catholic Church. And that is, it's not a difference in the religion. It's a difference in who is in control. It's about power. It's about control. And so they war with each other for influence. They war with each other for control. And so it's strictly, are the clerics and politicians assigned that are allied with Shia Islam going to have more control and authority than the Sunni Muslims? And so that is the motivation for the killing. This article goes on to say from CNN, the group believes that Shiites insult the close companions of Muhammad's prophet, of Muslim's prophet Muhammad. No, they don't. The only difference in Shiite versus Sunni Islam is that Shiite Islam, the Shiites thought that Muhammad's nephew, that he should be the rightful heir to the dominion of Islam. That after Muhammad's death, Ali should have become grandson was Ali. That he should have become the chief potentate of the caliph of Islam. But the Sunnis thought that because Abu Bakr and others along with him backed Muhammad early on, and they were a leading tribe in Mecca, that the leading tribe of Mecca, the clan from that tribe, because of Abu Bakr's role in backing Muhammad early on, that they should be given the reins of power in Islam. Again, no difference in the religion. Exact same individual that gave us all of this rubbish, the Quran and all of the hadith collections, the biography and the history, all came from the lips of Muhammad and his closest companions. There is no difference whatsoever in the theology. It is strictly a matter of who's in control. That's how the rift started 1,300 years ago. And that's where it remains. That is the fault line. Therefore, according to this CNN article, the militant group believes that killing Shiites is justified in Islam. Killing is justified in Islam, but the rationale that they have taken here is brain dead. Pakistan's Lashkar-e-Jhangvi, which intelligence officials say has become a major security threat, claimed responsibility for the sectarian attack on the Shiites. Yeah, they certainly thought that killing Shiites was a good thing. Officials said that most of the dead were from Pakistan's Shiite minority, which has come under siege from Sunni extremist groups who seem to carry out sectarian attacks at will. The Lashkar-e-Jhangvi Islamic group is not an extremist group. It's a group that was founded by the Pakistani ISI, the intelligence arm of their military. It is a mainstream religious and political party in Pakistan. And so they are not an extremist group. And in Islam, killing is glorified. So religious Muslims carry out killing at will. The explosion was caused by an improvised explosive device fitted into a motorcycle, was the original thought, at least for one of these explosions, that left 130 people wounded. This is a continuation of terrorism against the Shiites. More than 400 Shiites were killed in Pakistan last year, many by hitmen or by bombs, and the perpetrators are almost never caught. Nah, they know who they are. It's just that the government of Pakistan is controlled by Sunni Muslims. And so if you're a Sunni Muslim and you're targeting those who would like rights for Shiites, you're killed. I mean, if you're targeting the leaders in the Shiite community, you're a hero. And if you're a Shiite that is killed, good riddance. More than 400, though, were killed last year. And those who killed them were never prosecuted. The spokesperson for the terrorist group, the Lashkar-e-Jhangvi, claimed responsibility for the bloodshed near the main bazaar, the marketplace, near a school, and also near a business center. They also took credit for burning school bags and books because they are opposed to educating children as well. And, of course, after the blast, it was nothing but a sea of dead bodies. For those of you who have not looked at the pictures of this area, if you want to see what hell on earth is like, go see what Muslims do to Muslims. Yeah, I thought for fun that examine some of the history of this Islamic group in Pakistan. Certainly was interesting doing so. As it turns out, the Lashkar-e-Jhangvi terrorist group is just a new name for Lashkar-e-Jabbar. They were founded by the Pakistani ISI. Their primary goal is to create a Islamic theocracy in Pakistan and have Pakistan be governed by Sharia law, which would be law based upon the words and deeds of Muhammad, who was a rapist, a kidnapper, a pedophile, a mass murderer, and a terrorist. So it would make all of those bad things legal. It's amazing. The only things that would be illegal would be speaking against Islam and not being a Muslim. The group is definitely associated with the Taliban. They conduct joint maneuvers with the Taliban. They were and are continued to engage with the Taliban in throughout Afghanistan. They are most noted for their signature act, which is throwing acid into the faces of women who do not comply with their religious dress code. So this idea that, oh, they're attacking Shias because the Shias insult the close companions of Muhammad's prophet, that's absolutely untrue. I mean, the CNN, when they wrote that, is just brain dead. The Shias are the source of information. All that we know about Muhammad comes from Shia sources. What these guys are just interested in is imposing their agenda on Pakistan and then the world. And as I say, their signature move, the thing that they're best known for, is throwing nitric acid into the faces of little girls and women who do not walk around in an approved tent wearing the veil. It is just another indication as to why, so long as Islam exists, those areas that this religion infects will be hellish. Speaking of Islam and hellish conditions, Sri Lanka is now ordering 161 Muslim imams to leave the country for their bad behavior. These preachers have come from Bangladesh, India, Pakistan, the Maldives, and the Arab nations like Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates, as well as Qatar. The thing that is interesting here is that the murder of journalists has gone up exponentially in Sri Lanka. If a journalist writes an article that is critical of Islam, they find out they end up dead. And so there is a direct correlation here between the influx of Muslim imams from surrounding countries and the death of journalists. Staying in the same hellish environment, we learned over the weekend that in Baghdad, a wave of murderous attacks in Shiite neighborhoods around Baghdad killed at least 21 people and wounded 125 more. Four car bombs exploded in a market, a bus station, and on a major road in Sadr City, which is the most populous district in Baghdad for Shiite Muslims, killing seven people and wounding more than 30 others. It is likely that the attack was perpetrated by the Awakening Councils, the councils that Petraeus and the United States set up, that we fund, that we armed, that we equipped Iraq prior to our departure. They are now turning their weapons on the Shias. You see, when we invaded Iraq, Iraq was controlled by a secular dictator who was aligned with Sunni Muslims, and therefore he was at war with the Shia Muslims in Iran and kept Iran's nuclear program at bay. But after America's invasion of Iraq, we could not count here in America. We were blinded to the actual nature of Islam, and as a result, the Shia Muslims came to power, and they did to the Sunni Muslims what the Sunni Muslims had done to them, and we have created nothing more than a killing zone as a result, and 1 million people have died as a result of our invasion, and Iran now is on the cusp of a nuclear bomb. We'll return to Shattering Myths after the break.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy. There's no reason why you shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there, and I'm going to give you a free copy.